From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Seema Verma, the Trump administration's administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, in a speech in California on Wednesday, warned of problems facing the government's popular Medicare and Medicaid programs. Medicare turns 53 years old later this month. Verma also took aim at the Affordable Care Act. And when asked about the increasingly popular notion of expanding Medicare to all Americans, she slammed the idea. She later followed up her speech with a tweet claiming that Medicare for all would result in Medicare for none. Meanwhile, new data has found that the federal deficit has increased dramatically, far faster than economists were predicting. The increase is clearly linked to the reduction in corporate taxes into the Treasury as a result of the Trump and GOP tax reform bill that was passed last year. Trump had asserted that the tax cut would pay for itself, but the numbers from the Office of Management and Budget show that the tax cut will result in an additional $1 trillion in debt over the next decade. Republicans are chomping at the bit to use the deficit to claim cuts to services like Medicare. My guest is Josh Hoxie. He heads the Project on Opportunity and Taxation at the Institute for Policy Studies. Welcome to the program, Josh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's first start with the issue of the tax cuts and the reduction in the Treasury, basically this massive increase in the deficit that's piling on. An extra $1 trillion are expected to be racked up over a decade. Republicans have usually been the ones screaming about increases to the government debt. They seem to not be so concerned this time around. I wonder why.
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot of noise from conservative Republicans about the national debt and the every year federal deficit. But when push comes to shove, they're never as disciplined as they claim to be. And when they see something they want to spend money on, like massive unfunded wars overseas, they're happy to pull out the credit card and swipe it as many times as they want. But now that we've got tax cuts, you know, draining our federal coffers, you know, you hear cries for, oh, we can't afford the basic services that millions of Americans depend on. And that is really, I think, going to be a massive problem for them in the upcoming election, and also just a big problem for them in terms of any level of legitimacy as they make these claims.
Are they relying on Americans not connecting the dots between less money that the government is collecting from corporations and wealthy Americans and cuts to services? Are they just assuming we won't notice?
Yeah, I mean, this issue goes back decades, with George H.W. Bush calling this theory voodoo economics in the early 1990s and up until now, where we've had this idea that tax cuts can pay for themselves, which is a completely fantastical notion that is not upheld by any serious economist and yet is parroted by almost every congressional Republican elected. So, I mean, it's not that Democrats are great on all these issues, but at least they can do basic arithmetic.
Right, so, because this was being predicted, right? When the tax reform bill was being debated, where corporations would basically have their tax rates reduced dramatically, there were projected deficits. So people, you know, the economists were clearly projecting, okay, if corporations pay fewer taxes, the government will have less money for stuff. Not very complicated. In fact, what they're finding is that corporations took such great advantage of the tax reform law that the deficit is built up even faster, or is building up even faster than predicted.
Yeah, nothing happening between when the tax cuts passed and today should be surprising to anyone who is paying attention. And I think to your typical voter, it's not surprising. These were, and it's worth remembering for listeners, this was the most unpopular major legislation to pass in recent history, which is really saying something. So what we've got is these massive handout to the ultra wealthy in the form of major tax cuts and to the most profitable corporations, who basically turned around and put the cash in their executives' pockets. This did not trickle down or in any way make its way to workers. You know, workers didn't see an uptick in wages whatsoever. What they did see was their corporate executive heads seeing their pay increase, and stock prices went up and corporate stock buybacks went up. And meanwhile, yeah, we're seeing a reduced federal revenue, which is, you know, creating these calls for reduced spending on public programs, which is rather terrible.
Let's talk about what Seema Verma said then on Medicare. Medicare is a very popular program. Like Social Security, unfortunately, Republicans like to refer to it as an entitlement program. And this is a program, of course, signed nearly 53 years ago by Lyndon Johnson. The birthday, I believe, is the end of July when it turns 53 years old. This is what Seema Verma, she's the administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, in a speech, in a rare speech, actually, on Wednesday, this is what she said about the problems facing Medicare.
Despite the burgeoning demand for Medicare services, the reality is the Medicare program is on a troubling trajectory. As decades of neglect by Congress and past administrations have allowed it to travel down a path that is unsustainable. And its problems stem from the fact that many aspects of the program have become detached from its intended purpose to serve the patient.
That is Seema Verma talking about how Medicare is basically becoming detached from its original purpose to serve the patient. It's interesting because, Josh, certainly there are more people using Medicare. That makes sense because Americans are living longer, so the amount of time that they're on Medicare is increasing. So what do you make of her critiques of the problems facing Medicare?
I mean, I think this is just a new way of framing the same argument that this administration has been making, which is to say that we can't afford to take care of the health and wellness of our senior citizens as well as the rest of the country. I mean, they're saying they want to expand access, but when it comes to the most popular and the most effective healthcare program, health insurance program in the country, Medicare, there, you know, all of a sudden is a crisis of funding and they can't pay for it. Like, why can't we afford Medicare? I don't understand. It's cost effective. It works. People like it. Like, there's really no crisis here except one that's being manufactured by an administration that's hell-bent on cutting public services.
And of course, Trump managed to find $12 billion for subsidies for agribusinesses earlier in the week. For those businesses hurt by the tariffs that he has imposed on various countries that are in turn imposing retaliatory tariffs against farm businesses here in the U.S. So there was just magically money from that. That's, I believe, the Corporation for Credit. It's basically an agency through the USDA is able to tap into the Treasury for, you know, billions of dollars as needed to stabilize the food industry. But so that's something that he can just with a snap of his fingers claim to a lot, but not for Medicare.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real crisis of priorities here. I don't know anyone who would say, let's start a trade war and create all of these major public subsidies to accompany that trade war, and at the same time cut the health care of tens of millions of senior citizens in the United States. I just don't see that as a widely popular take. And I don't think the president particularly cares about the fact that how this looks. I think he knows exactly what he's doing, which is wreaking havoc on the public sector. So, I mean, we're seeing this over and over and over again from this administration. They are threatening to cut the Women, Infant, and Children WIC program, and in which half of the babies born in this country receive nutritional assistance. I mean, that is just literally taking formula out of the mouths of babies. Like, who does that? And yet that's what they'd rather, you know, cut rather than have to pay these basic public services that we've had in place for decades.
Well, we know what the Trump administration thinks of children and children's rights. All we have to do is look at the immigration situation. Let's actually play another clip from Seema Verma's speech that she gave on Wednesday, where during the question and answer session, she was asked about Medicare for All or single payer. And just the fact that she was asked that question, of course, is an indication of the increasing popularity of this idea. So this is what she had to say in response.
I think we've always said that we want to make sure that people have access to coverage. That's always been a goal of the administration. I just don't think that the government is the one to make decisions for each and every American. People need to make decisions about their health care on their own. They need to have choices and options, and they need to make the decisions that are going to work best for them. We don't think that the government should be making decisions about individual families and for people about their healthcare. That should come from the individual.
That's Seema Verma saying that the government shouldn't be making decisions for individuals about their healthcare, and that the government is interested in just access for all. Of course, if the government is making decisions for people, medical decisions for people through Medicare for All, then apparently it's doing that for Medicare recipients too, right? And the government doesn't seem to have a problem with that. Medicare recipients don't seem to have a problem with that. Josh, what do you make of this line of reasoning?
I mean, I think a lot of listeners should be reminded that we are the only country in the world, in the industrialized world, that doesn't guarantee healthcare for all of our citizens. So it's the position that is completely out of sync with how healthcare is handled by every other major country. And I think you're right that Medicare for All is on the rise. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Bernie Sanders was championing single-payer healthcare, now called Medicare for All, and could not get a co-sponsor for the life of him. And now he has 17 co-sponsors in the Senate, and there's a Medicare for All caucus in the House with champions like Pramila Jayapal from Washington. And we're seeing this issue rise. And I think it just makes sense for people. I mean, Medicare is a great public program. Why not expand it to include the rest of the country? And why not end this absolutely absurd notion that we should be profiteering off of the sickness and medical distress of our citizens? It's not a great place to have the private sector, even though it's how we've been doing it. It's not how any other country in the world does it. And by the way, their healthcare costs are significantly lower than ours.
Now, Seema Verma on Twitter followed up her speech with an infographic that was titled "Medicare for All Would Become Medicare for None." And she goes on to say, "By choosing a socialized system, you are giving the government complete control over the decisions pertaining to your care or whether you receive care at all. It would be the furthest thing from patient-centric care." Again, this is what Medicare recipients, current Medicare recipients, are enjoying. And so if the government doesn't have a problem with allowing Medicare recipients currently to have this form of socialized healthcare, why not all Americans? You can't have it both ways. You can't critique Medicare for All, but then be okay with Medicare. Although, of course, I'm sure they'd like to see Medicare as a whole disappear. And the other thing is, health insurance companies are the ones currently making all the decisions for patients rather than their doctors and patients, right?
Yeah, I mean, this argument is a pretty thinly veiled threat against Medicare as it stands today. And it's not one that's going to serve anyone's interest. I mean, health insurance aren't clamoring for the opportunity to take on the healthcare costs of our most expensive people to insure, which is senior citizens. I mean, it's not like you're seeing Blue Cross, Blue Shield executives getting on TV saying, you know, I really need to do it with Medicare because Blue Cross Blue Shield could do a better job than they can. Like, absolutely not. Medicare is a beloved program by most people that use it. And, you know, that's more than they can say. Most private insurance companies can say about their customers. So, I mean, this threat is pretty thinly veiled. It's not well received. And I don't think it's going to reflect well on this administration during the election. I don't think the Trump tax cuts are going to reflect well on them either, as we talked about earlier. What we're seeing is, you know, basically them testing these ideas by putting it out, having Seema Verma put this idea out and see how it lands on people. And I suspect they're going to get a cruel reality take when folks read this and see this and are rightfully alarmed by it.
I was heartened by the many Twitter replies to Seema Verma's tweet, and I just want to read a couple of them. One person said, "Every other developed country on earth manages to do it. If you're not capable of it, resign." Another one says, "It's because it's not reasoning, it's shilling on behalf of corporate profits. The nation's health be damned." One person said, "This is a horribly skewed way of comparing the systems. Public health puts healthcare first. Privatized health puts profits first." This seems to be a greater public understanding, much more so than when the Clintons tried to do healthcare reform and when Obama tried and then ended up with the Affordable Care Act. Much greater understanding among the public of the need for Medicare for All. So I'm wondering if you think that Seema Verma's attack on the idea of Medicare for All should be considered a victory, because at least now the highest levels of government feel feel this is an important enough issue that they need to push back against it.
Totally. I think this is a indication of the message that, you know, Bernie Sanders popularized in the 2016 election and a long time before that, and a lot of other people are championing today with him. I think, you know, if we go back to Gandhi and his famous quote that, you know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. I mean, we're in the fight you phase now. We've made it past the being ignored and being laughed at. And, you know, we had to do the exact same thing on the left. The Democratic Party had no real interest in Medicare for All going into the 2016 election or going into the fight over the Affordable Care Act back in 2008, 2009, 2010. So, I mean, we've been seeing this over the past 10 years start to come up, where not only have we had to fight on the left, we're now fighting on the right. And I think folks left, right, and center are starting to come around to the idea that this is a better, smarter, more effective, more efficient way to do healthcare, and are getting on board with it. I think that that's part of why I suspect this is going to reflect badly on Republicans come election time, because you're threatening folks with what they want, which is a healthcare system that serves their health, that serves the public need, not the profit motive and the profiteering of insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies.
In fact, I'm glad you brought up the issue of the Democratic Party needing to be pushed into supporting this. We're seeing now new progressive candidates running for office on a Medicare for All platform, like we saw the victory of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She was slammed and still is being slammed by her fellow Democrats for adopting what most Americans would see as very reasonable campaign platform demands, but her Medicare for All demand is being singled out. There was an interesting think tank, a gathering last week called Third Way, I believe it was last week or earlier this month, that brought together centrist Democrats who were basically planning, some called it a counter-revolution to the left flank of the Democratic Party, and they don't like the idea of Medicare for All. I think they might be losing, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's this, I have to laugh. I mean, there's always this sort of, like, don't get too radical, don't get too far outside of the acceptable debate. But that's not what voters are clamoring for, this sort of, like, diet neoliberalism that folks like Third Wave wanna push down our throats. Doesn't appeal to voters. I mean, you saw after Alexandria's win in New York City, we saw across the country a wave of folks realizing, oh, wait, these issues can win. And the same thing happened after the Bernie Sanders 2016 election. And it happens across the board. I mean, we've let conservatives frame the debate, especially around these tax cuts. We thought, you know, they thought that they were going to come in, pass these tax cuts, and then win the 2018 election on saying, look at us, we passed tax cuts. And the American people essentially yawned at them. Like, all you did was help rich people become richer. This didn't help me at all, didn't help my paycheck, didn't help my, you know, take home pay. All it did was ensure that Jeff Bezos went from 100 billionaire to 150 billionaire. Like, how's that really helping anyone besides Jeff Bezos? And I think this is sort of part and parcel of what we've been witnessing across the board. We need serious solutions to the problems facing people's everyday lives. We don't need this sort of, oh, walked back, like, incremental, really watered down version of left-wing policy. It didn't work 10 years ago. It didn't work 20 years ago. It's not working now. That's not what people want.
Josh, what are the threats facing Medicare and Medicaid? And I don't mean the threats that the Republicans claim exist in terms of underfunding, but the threats from lawmakers and from Trump.
I mean, it's not out of the question that the Republicans in Congress could take steps to dismantle the funding mechanism, could dismantle the funding structure within Medicare and Medicaid, so how doctors are paid, which would make a lot of doctors not want to take Medicare and Medicaid. You're already seeing a lot of doctors, especially in rural areas, stopping. They won't take Medicaid because of the funding mechanism involved, how they get repaid. So there's a lot of different ways that the administration could undermine Medicare and Medicaid from within, and then, you know, basically restructure the healthcare system to more heavily benefit the insurance companies over Medicare and Medicaid, and to shift costs towards you know, pharmaceuticals. There's a big problem in Medicare where we can't negotiate drug prices, and people have been clamoring to change that deal for a number of years now, and the administration is continuing to block that effort as well. So these are just a few of the ways that Trump and Republicans in Congress can both maintain the status quo, which is making it more expensive than it has to be, and can undermine it through the various internal funding structures and the overall macro budget of the program.
Right. And in fact, in the budget that the House Republicans released in June, which is ironically titled A Brighter American Future, they detail just these sorts of cuts. And just going back to the thing that we started our conversation with, which is a greater federal deficit that is very predictable because of the tax cut bill, is of course exactly what the Republicans will wave at Americans to justify these cuts. And so it goes on and on. The question is, will it actually work, particularly ahead of the midterm elections? I understand that there is, and every year the progressives in the House also release their people's budget as a sort of antidote to the House budget or Republican budgets in general. And I'm wondering if these people's budgets and the progressive ideas for how to budget our money is very much including as its central tenet a Medicare for All-like program. There are states that are attempting to do this within states, to have Medicare programs within states. Seema Verma, by the way, threatened to not allow such programs to go forward. So how much of Medicare for All will we start to see in the next few months in our conversations, national conversations?
Yeah, I think the issue is rising. It's rising because people are tired of the sort of whittling away of the Affordable Care Act. And I think that, you know, the Progressive Caucus is leading on this issue. A lot of states have tried to enact this at the state level. It's hard to do at the state level, which states are finding, but that's not a reason not to do it. But it's part of a bigger effort. I mean, we need to completely repeal the Trump tax cuts. We need to see more revenue coming into the federal government from millionaires and billionaires who are doing phenomenally well in our deeply unequal economy. And my organization, the Institute for Policy Studies, just this week released a report looking at how the ultra wealthy are warehousing their wealth in these donor advised funds, using philanthropy to basically avoid their basic tax needs, and they're paying their fair share in taxes and doing it in a way that makes them look good as if they're giving away charity, but also sort of abusing the intent of the law and charity, where the funds don't actually make it to charity. And that report, Warehousing Wealth, is on our website, inequality.org. And that's just one of the many ways that we're talking about trying to address these problems. And that's really what the public, I think, is looking for. They're looking for solutions. They're not looking for more of the same. And with Trump, I mean, he basically just shouts, but I think I have to hope people are tired of that at this point. I have to think that people are looking for real solutions and things like, you know, a real tax overhaul that helps working and middle-class families and isn't just a massive handout to the rich. That's what people are looking for. And the same is true for healthcare. They want healthcare that, you know, promotes their health and doesn't leave them broke at the end of the month. And that's not what they have right now.
Well, Josh, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We link to the Institute for Policy Studies website from our site. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Josh Hoxie heads the Project on Opportunity and Taxation at the Institute for Policy Studies. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.